Over the past few weeks, we have been hearing a common refrain from public officials, which is, we need to make decisions based on science. Science, not politics, must be the guide. We've got to pay attention to science. Those are all actual quotes from politicians over the past few weeks. These comments, of course, are being made in reference to fighting COVID-19, but I think they're indicative of a much more widespread sentiment that has been growing for the past few years. Since 2017, more than a million people have joined this annual March for Science protests in hundreds of cities around the globe. These protesters' self-professed mission is, quote, to mobilize advocates around the world in support of evidence-based, science-informed public policies, unquote. Some of the protesters have proclaimed an almost messianic vision of scientists in societies, exemplified by their slogan, which we got to, scientists pursuing truth, saving the world. I think the COVID-19 crisis has taken the messianic vision of science to an entirely new level. Consider the hero of the day, Dr. Anthony Fauci. People are now wearing masks with the slogan, Trust Fauci. And last week, a Harvard scientist actually put up this post on Twitter, in Dr. Fauci, we trust. Of course, mimicking our national motto, in God we trust. Now, I do want to say this messianic vision of science is somewhat understandable, and I think we can appreciate the power of it. Anyone who has taken an aspirin or uses an iPhone appreciates the benefits of modern science. I certainly do. Science has produced wonder-working drugs and miraculous inventions. It's led to staggering increases in both personal freedom and wealth. My dad remained alive and healthy past his 100th birthday because of advances in medical science that cured him of colon cancer twice. We enjoy fresh fruits and vegetables year-round because of technological innovations in transportation and refrigeration. People of all classes now have instantaneous access to vast online libraries that would make the fabled Library of Alexandria seem provincial. And, of course, you're able to watch me right now because of revolutionary scientific advances in mass communications. Given these almost magical powers that science has demonstrated, I think the seductive appeal of what C.S. Lewis called sometimes scientocracy, rule of society by scientists, is undeniable. Why not trust scientists to lead us? Why not replace or at least modify representative democracy with a society where decisions about public policy and culture are made by neutral experts exercising their scientific expertise? I think many Americans might well agree this would be a good idea. According to a Pew Forum survey last year, 2019, the number of people who have a great deal of confidence in scientists to act in the best interests of the public rose an astonishing 67% from 2016 to 2019. Americans currently trust their scientists more than they do their religious leaders, military leaders, the news media, business leaders, and even public school principals. Yet, as important as scientific expertise is to solving problems, I think handing over authority to unelected scientific experts would be deeply problematic. And I think C.S. Lewis gives us some guidance here. In 1958, Lewis wrote an essay on the dangers of scientocracy that I think should be required reading for everyone. In that essay, it was called Willing Slaves of the Welfare State. And in that essay, Lewis said this, I dread government in the name of science. That is how tyrannies come in. In every age, the man who wants us under their thumb, if they have any sense, will put forward the particular pretension which the hopes and fears of that age render most potent. They cash in. It has been magic. It has been Christianity. Now it will certainly be science. Lewis also predicted the new oligarchy must more and more base its claim to plan us on its claim to knowledge. This means they must increasingly rely on the advice of scientists till in the end, the politicians proper become merely the scientists' puppets. Now, I think Lewis was eerily prophetic, and you don't need to look far today to see science being misused as a wedge, pretty much of authoritarianism. Let's take the area of ecology, where some scientists are proposing draconian measures to protect biodiversity. This man is evolutionary zoologist Eric Pianca at the University of Texas, Austin. In the name of science, Dr. Pianca says we must reduce the Earth's human population by up to 90%. And he calls on government officials to confiscate all the earnings of any couple who has more than two children. Or let's look at criminal justice. The presumption of innocence and the right to confront your accusers has been hallmarks of a civilized criminal justice system, but they are now under attack in the name of science. In the name of science, judges across America are deciding who stays in jail based on computer algorithms that purport to predict whether an accused person will reoffend. These algorithms typically are proprietary and confidential, and not even judges or defense attorneys are allowed to review the underlying assumptions of the models. Judges and defense attorneys are just supposed to trust the scientific expertise of the professors who wrote the algorithm. In the area of medicine, decisions about medical care once left to patients and their families are increasingly being made by doctors and even government in the name of superior scientific expertise. Patients or families who disagree now find that they have little or no say over the life or death decisions of their loved ones. If a doctor or hospital decides that your child does not merit further medical treatment, not only will you have no power to override their decision, you may even be prohibited from seeking medical treatment for your child in another facility, as we saw with the infamous case of baby Alfie in England a couple of years ago. Also, in the name of science, many are abandoning their commitments to free speech. Professor Lawrence Torsello at the Rochester Institute of Technology argues, for example, that global warming skeptics should be charged with criminal negligence. Journalist Adam Weinstein, journalists used to support free speech, journalist Adam Weinstein says that global warming skeptics should, quote, face jail, they should face fines, they should face lawsuits, unquote. So much for free speech, all in the name of science. Then we have the areas of religion and morality, where science is being promoted as a substitute for the moral and spiritual authority of traditional religion. So we have Science is My Savior, as the title of an article written by Scientific American columnist Michael Shermer a few years back. Or we have the idea that science can determine what's moral and immoral, according to a book by neuroscientist Sam Harris. And we even have self-described transhumanists like Nick Bostrom and Julian Savulescu, who offer a vision of humans evolving into a new godlike race through the magic of scientific breeding. And then, of course, there is COVID-19. In the name of science, some public health experts are currently advocating continuing shutdowns of much of society, including churches, seemingly in perpetuity, or at least for a year or more. And social media giants Twitter and Facebook are imposing censorship of any scientists who dissent from this week's scientific orthodoxy, which may not be the same as last week's orthodoxy. Now, I think this growing authoritarianism in the name of science should concern all of us wherever we fall on the political spectrum. And I'd like to offer a few reasons why our drift toward scientocracy is such a bad idea in my view. Number one, scientists aren't nearly as objective or neutral as people seem to think. Now, I think far too many Americans accept what I would call the myth of the scientist in the white lab coat. That is, when they think about scientists, they visualize people like, in this photo, in lab coats who have been trained to be impartial, factual, and objective in everything. According to one survey, nearly two-thirds of Americans see scientists as neither particularly liberal nor conservative. They think of them as nonpartisan and neutral. The reality is rather different. a nationwide survey of 2,500 plus scientists conducted by Pew Forum in conjunction with the American Association for the Advancement of Science unequivocally showed that scientists as a group are far from neutral or nonpartisan. Consider political ideology. 52% of scientists identify themselves as liberal. Only 9% classify themselves as conservative. That makes scientists four times less likely than the general public to identify as conservative, and it makes scientists 2.6 times more likely to identify as liberals as the general public. Or let's look at party affiliation. A whopping 6% of scientists identify as Republicans, whereas 55% identify as Democrats. Again, completely unrepresentative of the population as a whole. Scientists' belief about public policy closely track with their underlying ideology. Consider the statement, when something is run by the government, it is usually inefficient and wasteful. 57% of the public agrees with that statement. 58% of scientists disagree. Another statement, the best way to ensure peace is through military strength. 53% of the public agree. 65% of scientists disagree. And scientists can be just as smitten by their political heroes as everyone else. Take the illustrious Dr. Fauci. Thanks to WikiLeaks, we know that one of Dr. Fauci's favorite persons in politics is Hillary Clinton. And in fact, he sent her effusive emails to her through her staff. Please tell her that we all love her and are very proud to know her, he wrote once. Please tell the secretary that I love her more than ever, he wrote in another email. Doesn't exactly sound impartial, does it? But it's not just political ideology where scientists aren't representative of the general public. They are even less representative in the area of religion. Let's look at this. According to surveys, again, 83% of the general public believes in God, and 33% of scientists do. Think about that. Religion impacts our deepest views about the world and what's important. There is a cavernous gulf in this area between most scientists and most of the general public. The bottom line is that when dealing with pronouncements from scientists on public policy, let alone culture, people need to understand that there is little neutral about scientists as a class in America. In particular, they are grossly unrepresentative of the population as a whole, unrepresentative ideologically, politically, religiously. It's therefore highly questionable to treat scientists as a class as if they are necessarily objective or impartial whenever they speak on politics or culture. Many may try to be, but the simple fact of the matter is that one's underlying worldview can't help but impact the rest of one's views. And so is it really wise to delegate public authority, or would it be wise to delegate public authority to a group that is so unrepresentative of the public as a whole? Okay. Reason two why scientocracy would be such a bad idea is that science is a whole lot more fallible than its boosters typically claim. Now, the promoters of basing public policy on science seem supremely confident in the ability of scientists to objectively and accurately arrive at the truth in a timely manner. And scientists do have many amazing achievements to their credit, but they also have many stupendous failures. Science is many things. An infallible oracle, it is not. If you have been following the news at all closely during the COVID-19 pandemic, you probably have seen this already. In the space of weeks, we have seen how various expert projections from scientists of catastrophic numbers of deaths and hospitalizations have turned out to be catastrophically wrong. Yet public policies were based on those wrong models. We've gone from the World Health Organization claiming in January that there is no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of COVID-19 to believing that the virus is highly contagious between humans. We've gone from scientists insisting that masks are absolutely useless and even dangerous for ordinary people to wear to being told that masks are so critical they must be mandated for everyone. We've gone from Dr. Anthony Fauci telling us that COVID-19 wouldn't be a problem in January, that it was perfectly safe to go on cruise ships, something he said in March, and safe to go to the gym and to movie theaters, which I think he said at the end of February, to being told that we all need to be locked down in our homes for months on end or disaster will ensue. The thing is, anyone who knows anything about the history of science will be able to tell you that these kinds of scientific failures are not exceptional. They are a normal part of science, which, after all, is a fallible human enterprise, just like other fallible human enterprises. A handful of some examples from the history of science. One of the biggest was eugenics. In the early decades of the 20th century, America's leading biologists had the bright idea that they could breed better humans through what was called eugenics. Eugenics was the effort to breed and direct human evolution through forced sterilization and other methods based on an understanding of Darwinian biology. These scientists turned out to be wrong, and later scientists regarded eugenics as little more than junk science. Or take the lobotomy. A lobotomy is brain surgery where they sever connections in your prefrontal cortex. They actually used a modified ice pick in your to screw things up. In the 1940s, lobotomies were marketed as a miracle cure for mental illness by leading scientists who promoted it as, quote, always safe, unquote. Someone even won a Nobel Prize for helping to develop the procedure. By the 1950s, an estimated 50,000 Americans were lobotomized. But then it turned out that it could render people severely incapacitated and that the procedure had many more side effects than originally believed. Wasn't quite as safe as they thought. Then, during our own lifetimes, we've experienced the consensus view of scientists that proteins that don't code for DNA were functionless junk DNA, leftovers from the haphazard process of unguided Darwinian evolution. Yet now, in a stunning reversal, scientists increasingly believe that much of so-called junk DNA does perform biological functions. The belief that most of our genome consisted of junk DNA may turn out to be one of the biggest scientific blunders of the past century. And then, final example, algorithms. As I mentioned earlier, there's a movement to use computer algorithms to predict scientifically who will reoffend in the criminal justice system and then to base decisions on incarceration about that. They're also being used in social work areas and social programs. In 2014, Los Angeles County used an algorithm to try to predict which children and which families were at the highest risk for child abuse to target those families. It was sold again in the name of science. And the algorithm did correctly predict abuse in 171 cases, but it falsely predicted abuse in 3,829 cases. In other words, it was wrong 96% of the time. Okay. A third reason scientocracy isn't a great idea. Science isn't as self-correcting as its defenders insist. We're often told today that science is so wonderful because it's so self-critical and self-correcting. Well, not always. Take the eugenics crusade again. Eugenics wasn't just promoted by a handful of fringe scientists. For decades, it was the consensus view of the scientific community in America and Europe, pushed uncritically by evolutionary biologists and other scientists at Harvard, Princeton, Stanford, Yale, the National Academy of Sciences. They were people that were very uncritical of this. On the other hand, the people who were the most critical came from outside science. They were people of faith, particularly Catholics and a few evangelical Protestants. And these critics were actually criticized by the scientists at the time as anti-science because they dared to criticize the scientific consensus on eugenics. What finally killed eugenics was not the scientific community, but revulsion from the public after post-World War II revelations about the Nazi eugenics program. So much for self-correcting science. A fourth and final reason why scientocracy is a bad idea. Scientists have tunnel vision. Scientists aren't experts in everything, and they tend to focus on the things they know, which makes sense. That's admirable when it comes to science research, but it's a disaster when it comes to public policy. Deaths from COVID-19 are terrible, and I don't want to make light of that at all, but so are deaths from depression, child abuse, untreated cancer, and many other things. So are violations of free speech, free assembly, and free exercise of religion. So is the lack of in-person human interactions, especially for children. So is the taking away of people's livelihoods. Public policy is rarely, if ever, about pursuing one good to the exclusion of all others. It requires reconciling competing goods. Yet scientists aren't moral philosophers, and they are not experts in everything. So they have no special expertise in how to reconcile competing goods. Again, C.S. Lewis, I think, is quite wise here. He wrote, "I dread specialists in power because they are specialists speaking outside their special subjects. Let scientists tell us about sciences, but government involves questions about the good for man and justice and what things are worth having at what price. And on these, a scientific training gives a man's opinion no added value." I think Lewis was right. So what's my suggested antidote to the drive toward Scientocracy? Well, since I had four problems of Scientocracy, I have four suggestions with which I will conclude. Number one is practice healthy skepticism. Good science isn't determined by decree, it's determined by the evidence. And just because a scientist makes a claim doesn't mean he or she is right. As my friend John Lennox likes to say, nonsense remains nonsense even when talked about by world-famous scientists. So when scientists make claims in order to demand new laws or regulations or government spending or things that they want the criminal justice system to do, ask them to explain the evidence backing up their views. Don't just accept their assertions. They're not the voice of God. Two, we need to defend free speech in science. For all the talk of scientific consensus, science advances when scientists are free to raise new ideas. Yesterday's heresies can become tomorrow's orthodoxies. On the other hand, if you want to stop the progress of science, by all means, shut down the right of the dissenter. Do what the social media giants are doing and remove videos or tweets, even by doctors and scientists, if they raise uncomfortable questions or make arguments you don't like. Censorship is a recipe for stopping progress, not advancing it. And then three, I think we need to insist that policymakers recruit scientists who disagree with each other. Government scientists engaged in crafting public policy get flabby and lazy when they are treated like the voice of God. It now appears that a couple of government scientists convinced our president and the White House to pursue a strategy of a national shutdown based largely on a faulty model issued by the Imperial College in the UK. Other epidemiologists were skeptical, but they didn't have a voice in the process. Politicians may not have the resources to ask experts tough questions themselves, but they should recruit a diverse group of experts who can question and challenge each other. Dr. Fauci, as great as he may be, would be a far better scientist if he was forced to confront intelligent questions and criticism from fellow scientists during the deliberations on public policy, rather than simply basking in the glow of adoring fans who proclaim, "In Fauci, we trust." Okay. Final suggestion. We need to make the case that scientists alone shouldn't dictate public policy. Scientists should advise, but most public policy questions aren't just science questions. Shutting down the country is not just a science question. And so scientists like Dr. Fauci or anyone else shouldn't have the only voices at the table. To cite C.S. Lewis again, government involves questions about the good for man and justice and what things are worth having at what price. And on these, a scientific training gives a man's opinion no added value.